This is Weekend Let's Hear It. I'm Kara Lawrence. Thanks for joining me. Today, you'll meet pianist Roman Rabinovich, who appears on the Rising Stars series presented by the Gilmore this Sunday at 4 p.m. in the Wellspring Theater of the Epic Center. His program spans the ages, from works of Haydn and Beethoven to Schumann and Janáček, and even a work by Rabinovich himself. Roman Rabinovich was born in 1985 in Tashkent, Uzbekistan. His first piano teacher was his mother. At the age of 9, he and his parents immigrated to Israel, where he studied in Tel Aviv, later moving to the United States to study at the Curtis Institute and the Juilliard School. For those of us whose jobs keep us near home, it's hard to comprehend the life of a concert artist. I began our conversation by asking Rabinovich to describe his season so far and where he's going after he performs in Kalamazoo.
Well, musician's life is quite crazy, can seem crazy to some people. It is indeed a lot of traveling, and one is never in one place, constantly moving around. I'm almost never home more than a week. I started the season by playing first half of my Haydn project, which consists of complete piano sonatas of Joseph Haydn, and I'm doing it over 2 seasons, so this was the first installment, and I played 5 concerts in Israel and 5 concerts in Scotland at festivals there with 5 different programs. I also did this in Cleveland a few weeks ago. Besides that, I'm playing so-called regular programs of other composers, concertos, and a lot of chamber music as well. So it's constantly changing repertoire and preparing for the next thing. And you have to kind of plan ahead very, very well what you're going to do in a year or even 2 years, and sometimes in 3 years, and a month from now and next week. So it's constantly, you have to shift your priorities and plan very well the repertoire.
And after Kalamazoo, if you don't know, I'm getting the sense that your calendar tells you where you're going rather than keeping it all in your head.
Well, after Kalamazoo, I'm playing a few chamber music programs, one of which will be at Carnegie Hall with a violinist, my friend Tessa Lark. And then I'm going to London, and then to, I think, Arizona and Texas and Washington. I can't tell you everything, but yeah.
When would you say you actually began your concert career? Was it after the Rubinstein competition in 2008?
Well, it definitely launched my career, but it was a gradual process over the years, and, you know, just became more intense with every season. You know, I started playing very early on, and I was playing as a teenager quite regularly. But I would say after the Rubinstein competition, it became busier.
With the time that you've invested in performing around the world, do you find that now you have friends and acquaintances all over the globe that you can spend a little time with when you're touring?
Yes, definitely. It's one of the more wonderful sides of performing is that you get to all these places, different places, and you make friends and you keep in touch. And next time you come and meet more people. And yeah, this is the part that I absolutely love.
You have connections in Kalamazoo, if I'm not mistaken. Dan Gustin, the director of the Gilmore, is someone you'd know by now, right?
Yes. Yes, I met him. Yes. He's a wonderful person.
Have you appeared at the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival before?
I haven't. No, this is going to be my debut.
When Dan Gustin came in a few months ago to talk about this season of Gilmore Rising Stars concerts, one thing he did drop during the interview was that you and Diana Cohen have a relationship. And she, of course, was the principal violin of the Kalamazoo Symphony for several years.
Yes, actually, Dan and I are getting married in July. And last year we came to play in Kalamazoo. We played a family concert with her dad, Franklin Cohen, who was principal clarinetist in Cleveland Orchestra for 40 years. So we played there last year, and I met Diana's friends there, and it's looking forward to my visit.
And congratulations on your upcoming wedding.
Thank you.
I'd like to learn more about your Haydn project. First of all, by asking, aren't some of the early sonatas, they're written for harpsichord or clavichord? I mean, did you really exhaustively go through all of his keyboard music?
I did. I'm still doing this. I'm still in the process. Yes, you're absolutely right. It was written for, the early pieces written for harpsichord, and then some of them also for clavichord. And gradually he writes more for the fortepiano, and first for the Viennese fortepiano, and then when he went to London, he encountered the English instruments, and that also changed his piano writing style. So it's really a fascinating process to watch that trajectory and the way the style and the instruments go together.
The first person I can't help but think of is Beethoven, because we know, you know, he wrote for himself, he was a virtuoso, and he exploited each new development of the keyboard, the forte piano. Can you compare that to Haydn?
Yes. As you said, Beethoven was a great pianist and virtuoso, and so was Mozart. Well, Haydn wasn't a great soloist, although he was, by all accounts, a wonderful player, and he actually played all the instruments. When he was a young boy, his first teacher taught him how to play all the instruments and to sing also. But nevertheless, he wasn't a virtuoso, so he was composing music for other people, for students, for amateurs, and also for professional musicians. This also determined the style of the sonata. Sometimes it is for professional musicians. It's much more extroverted, and there is much more space for improvisation and ornamentation, and as opposed to the sonatas that were written for amateur players, they were all written in, so to speak. So the ornaments are already in the music. So this is the main difference between the main two kinds of sonatas.
The other name that pops into my head is one of the great pianists who, for me, sort of introduced Haydn's keyboard music to me, and that's Alfred Brendel. Is he an influence?
Oh, yes, I love his recordings. Yeah, he's one of my favorite musicians, for sure. And he has a wonderful recording of 11 Haydn sonatas.
Well, I think Brendel recorded them in the mid-80s, so we're really overdue for some fresh Haydn, Roman. One thing that you've had, I guess, the privilege of having is a series of amazing teachers. So you've studied with Ari Vardi, is it Seymour Lipkin at Curtis, and Robert McDonald. I mean, these are the top schools and the top teachers. What do you do with all that wisdom that they give you?
I was very fortunate to work with these people. They're all amazing musicians and very different from each other. So now I'm at the point where I'm finding my own voice through all this information. I also, in the last 4 years or so, I've been working with Andre Schiff, and that also was a tremendous influence on me. And Mr. Lipkin was such an amazing musician and so focused, and his way of playing Beethoven and Mozart and Schubert was absolutely exemplary for me. Yes, now I'm trying to combine this, all these influences, and create something new.
One way you're literally creating something new is by composing, and I'm excited to see on your Kalamazoo program a piece you wrote called Capriccio Clown on a Bicycle. Would you tell us the story behind this piece?
I wrote this piece for a recital I did last year at Alice Daly Hall in Lincoln Center. I've been composing and improvising since I was a kid. But in the last 2 years or so, I decided to give it much more attention and focus. So I've been composing more systematically now. It's quite a humorous piece that explores the elements of clumsiness and the pathetic, maybe. And it's quite virtuosic. So I'm looking forward to playing it.
Listeners who go to romanrabinovich.net might be able to find a link to a live performance from Alice Tully Hall of this piece, which I watched with great interest. You mentioned virtuosic. It does look like a finger buster. Sometimes that can be deceiving, though. Some things that are really impressive aren't as hard as they look. But so I wrote down, you know, as a question, did you make it easy on yourself by playing to your strengths, or did you write in such a way that demanded more of you, technically?
Well, no, I didn't make it easy on myself, no, to answer your question shortly. No, I didn't think of writing it for my own performances necessarily. I was just writing music, and I mostly write without the piano, so I don't think of writing comfortably for the piano, although I think it's quite pianistic, but it's not easy.
You called it Capriccio Clown on a Bicycle, which, of course, puts a lot of great imagery in my mind. It did make me laugh, and in parts it had that quality of a sad misfit. And I thought of the film Laugh, Clown, Laugh with Lon Chaney. which is actually a heartbreaking little film if you've ever seen it. Have you seen?
No, I don't know it.
It's a 1920.
I have to watch it.
1928 silent film with Lon Chaney. The quality of a clown in a way is they operate by looking for the absurdity in things, observing life, and then they jump in to interact in a way that makes people smile or laugh. You yourself have a part of your personality that's an observer, because you like to sketch. You like to, with what free time you have, you like to draw and sketch and make art.
Yes, I do. I've been painting most of my life, and I absolutely love sketching on the trains and on flights, abstracts or portraits or many things. When it's difficult to talk about visual art, one has to see it. But yes, I've been working with many mediums, and in the last few years, also been doing work on my iPad, working with light, which is very exciting, a new medium. Yes, it's something that I really, really love doing.
And again, if listeners visit RomanRabinovich.net, you'll see many examples of your work. Let's get back to the program so we make sure we cover that. The Haydn begins the program, then we hear your piece, Capriccio, Clown on a Bicycle, and you follow that with Beethoven, as if, isn't it supposed to go Haydn to Beethoven, you know, to chronologically?
Well, I will not dare to play anything after the Beethoven Sonata. It's one of the most powerful and profound pieces, and it needs to be at the end of the half or at the end of the program. In this case, it closes the first half. It's the sonata in Opus 101. He wrote this piece after silence of 4 years. He was very ill. He broke the silence with this piece, and it starts the so-called late period in his work, and it's a very new kind of language, much more personal and much more extreme than anything before or after. Starts with the first movement. It's quite rhetorical, and it seems to always ask questions without giving answers. Is a kind of a Schumannesque march, and then there's the introduction to the last movement, which is one of the most profound pieces that I know. It's the entire introduction is on the una corda, on one string only, so it has this very special kind of sound, like whisper, and it deals with, you know, the questions of life and death. And then after the quick quotes of the first movement, like a memory of the first movement, the last movement starts, and there you have all the answers to the questions asked in the first movement. Thank you. quite a optimist, despite his very difficult life. He had really strong optimistic belief in the human spirit, and you can really hear it in this piece.
When you were starting to learn Beethoven as a young pianist, which early, middle, or late, which sonatas did you want to learn at that time?
Well, I think my first Beethoven sonata was, well, after the Opus 49, I think this was my first one. But the first real one was Pathétique, Opus 13. And then I was just so taken by the music that I started just reading
all of them.
I didn't play them in concerts, but I was so taken and so touched by this music that I had to know more. I was, of course, listening to recordings and so on. But this is the greatest music, for the piano, no question. It's a foundation of everything that comes after this and well-tempered clavier. After the intermission, I will continue with In the Mists by Janáček. Four incredibly beautiful pieces by the Czech composer Janáček that are reminiscent of folk music and have a very impressionistic sound world. And then I will end the program with Faschenschwank aus Wien, the Viennese Carnival by Robert Schumann. And it's a wonderful cycle of five movements.
Where does it fall in the big pieces like Kreisleriana and in his output?
Well, you know, his wife, Clara, asked him to write something more accessible, because she felt like the cycles, the earlier cycles like Kreisleriana and David Spindler were too personal for the audience to understand. So he wrote this wonderful piece, and well, it is indeed more accessible, but it also has this incredible poetry that every piece by Schumann has. And the first movement is quite kaleidoscopic. It goes from one episode to another without any preparation, you know, and very extreme emotions. And there is a wonderful quote of Marseillaise in the middle of the first movement, commentary on the French fashion that was all over Europe and in Vienna. There's a wonderful romance, the second movement, and the scherzino, and the most beautiful intermezzo, the fourth movement, very passionate movement with a lot of poetry. And it ends with a brilliant finale. Thank you.
What new piece are you working on right now that you're composing?
Well, I'm working on a few pieces, and I'm writing a piece for my next program, next European tour in the fall for Wigmore Hall
in London,
and other pieces as well. I'm working on different pieces simultaneously.
Are you working on anything beyond solo piano? Are you working on chamber music or orchestra?
Yes, chamber music. It's too early to say concrete things about it. Also, I'm doing arrangements, and I wrote a chamber group arrangement for Romeo and Juliet by Prokofiev for Nonet.
That reminds me to mention that you do have a fairly recent recording of Romeo and Juliet for the solo piano version with Prokofiev, and then your own transcription of Ravel's Daphnis and Chloe, and the three scenes from Petrushka by Igor Stravinsky. That's his transcription, and all on one album, which to me is like a huge guilty pleasure right there. Fabulous.
Yes, and it's called Ballet Russe.
Ballet Russe.
It was all kind of around Diaghilev's dance company, Ballet Russe, and all these composers were very much involved with this company, and were writing really important pieces for him.
Listening to that record is where I got my idea of who you are as a pianist in the spectrum of pianists, and I love how much you care about the clarity of details in these really tricky pieces. I mean, you're putting clarity over the sort of smeary gestures that sometimes pianists mm-hmm. will use, and that sometimes causes you to pull back on tempo a little, but it doesn't get less exciting.
Thank you.
It's really exciting to hear. Well, I can't take any more of your time. Thank you for being so generous with this interview, and all the best on your travels to Kalamazoo and beyond.
Thank you.
Pianist Roman Rabinovich performs on the Gilmore's Rising Star series on Sunday. Details at thegilmore.org. I'm Kara Lawrence. Thanks for tuning in to Weekend Let's Hear It.